Well, hey, y'all, welcome to the Common Good Podcast. So glad to have you here with us today. You know what, Rich? Hang on a minute. There we go. All right. Hey, y'all, welcome to the Common Good Podcast. For a minute there, I didn't think we were live, which is something that drives me crazy when people do live streams. And they're like, hold on a minute. I don't think this thing is live, but it is now. So thanks for being a part of the Common Good Podcast, friends. If this is a regular for you, you might know that we have regular conversations on Tuesdays about the politics of life in America. And on Wednesdays, we love talking to people who are active in the world, trying to create the kind of world that they want to be in. And I'm super excited to have Rich here. Rich Elogis is the person behind a group called Leaving MAGA. And it's part of his own story, part of the story that he works with. So Rich, thanks so much for being here.
Yes, my pleasure, Doug. Thank you. Happy to be here. I don't get a chance to speak with a lot of faith-based organization, so it's a great honor for me to be with you today. Looking forward to a great conversation.
Yeah, beautiful. Well, hey, I think the first place I saw you, I was sitting inside the United Center at the DNC, and on the big screen popped up a series of stories and testimonies and of people who've been a part of politics in certain ways, and it was for the Democratic presidential nomination last August, and I saw you on there, and I thought, I love groups like this because we're always hunting around for other people who are also helping folks who find themselves trapped inside of a world that they don't want to be in. And I want to be really clear. Some people, they don't feel trapped in MAGA or they don't feel trapped in Trump supporting or Republicanism. Some people are quite happy, right? But there's an awful lot of people who are like, if I had another option, I would take it. I just don't feel like I do. And we know those people, we meet them all the time. We know people in our family and friends that they kind of feel that way. And so it's a really complicated situation for people who are looking to make an identity change like this. Okay, give us a little background on your personal story, how you got into this. And then we're going to have a chance, folks, to talk with Rich about what his organization does. And if you don't already know them over at leavingmaga.org, you should head over there. But Rich is putting together material, helping people. And Rich, the way I like to think about it is especially people who are feel deeply tied into what MAGA promises. Because I think there's a bit of a difference between the like standard Republican who's just like, look, I'm an R, I vote for Republicans, you know, and so I just go with whoever the nominee is because I'm not going to vote for a Democrat. And then there's some people for whom they're like, I don't even see myself as political and I am in with Trump and MAGA. And it's a different thing. Like when I talk to those folks, they're not talking politics. They're talking about a different identity in the way they think about it. And they'll always tell me, I'm not partisan. I'm not political. I wasn't in any of this stuff. I think both parties are a pox on the House of America. That's why I choose MAGA. Like they see MAGA as the third alternative. And some other people are like, look, I'm been Republican my whole life, or it came with my faith or something like that. So can you talk a little bit about your view of that and your own experience with it?
Sure, sure. Thank you. Let me get my bad joke out of the way. If I'd lived many, many years ago, I'd probably be an excommunicated Catholic. But remain a Catholic today with our family. So let me just get that really awful joke. It'll be my only awful joke today.
I bet it will.
I actually, I relate to the latter about those who felt like both parties have failed. They're the same. That was my entree into MAGA back in 2015 and 16. I was someone who voted for third parties many times. I was someone who did believe that the two parties were the same. And mm-hmm. I thought that the entire political order and the system itself needed to be obliterated and built anew. And so that was why I gravitated toward the MAGA movement in the community. And I really stress and emphasize community because if we look at how MAGA is so commonly spoken about amongst those who oppose the president, they speak about it in terms of cult, for example. And I think that's really, really unhelpful language because what that does is it tries to demean that people find value and meaning in being a part of the MAGA community. And you know, when I look at it as far as in terms of if we look at faith-based communities, I home in on the community part of faith-based communities where they're like-minded individuals, they have shared dreams, shared goals, yeah. They have a shared faith. Now, I'm not making a direct comparison because so much about MAGA is based in and buttressed by falsehoods and lies. And I had to realize that very painfully. It was liberating for me, but over the course of an entire year, it did take me that much time to walk away from that second family, that community.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. You can name the day, huh? Wow. That's right. So what led to that, Rich? What happened? How do you have a date so specific? And I've heard you talk about how COVID was handled and feeling like, okay, well, we kind of do need something a little more than, you know, just anti-government sentiment. But what was it about that day that caused you to come to that moment of epiphany? Okay. Okay. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. Yep. Wow. 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 Yeah. Oh. I see. Well, I was okay. I was going to ask you, how does somebody like you quietly quit MAGA when you ran a podcast where you were extolling and helping people find their way into the MAGA movement and into the community that is formed around MAGA? And it is, in my estimation, clear that it is a community. And you were public in other spaces and ways. I'm sure you were public with family and friends. Like, how does a person start to quietly quit that kind of thing? And I ask this for a couple of reasons. One, so people will recognize when other members of their family or friend group are doing it. And also, maybe they're thinking about themselves, like, I don't know how to quietly quit. Because here's what I'm sure of, Rich, and I'd love your input on this at some point after you get to tell me the rest of that story. Most of us would rather be wrong and in a community than be right and be alone. Because we will determine that maintaining the community is more important and gives us more than being right about something that may or may not matter. So you just don't want to give it all up just to go be right. And I actually think that's a good thing. I wish more of us were willing to set aside the things we think, you know. And I'm a pastor who thinks religion kind of matters, but it doesn't mean you have to give up that which is important. So this reality that even when people are like, okay, I don't go with all of it, or I don't even know that they're all right, or I kind of don't even care like I did before, but I don't want to give up the community. How does someone quietly quit when they've been public the way that you have? That's it. Yeah. You know, we're, in our world, we say, look, there's always three conditions in place for someone to make a significant change in their life. And this is true in politics. It's true in religion. Those of us who help people to acquire a religion that they didn't grow up with or something. It's true for people who want to start playing pickleball. I don't know, or like stop drinking or change their eating habits. There's always these three elements that are somewhere in place. Someone takes in some kind of information. Maybe it's information that's exciting and new, like, oh, there's a new game I can play, and it's not as hard as tennis, and it's pickleball. Or someone says, hey, I think my drinking is kind of interfering with some things in my life. Or there's some bit of realization, knowledge, facts, and usually a bunch of them. And when someone looks back on their life, they'll be like, oh, there was a long list. But at the time, there was one or two that popped out. So that's usually there, often at the beginning. But it's there. And then there needs to be an invitation at some point. Like someone, when you hear people tell their stories about these transitions, they'll usually say, and then someone said, or I heard something, or there was some call, like someone else had been in front of me and said, I'm new to pickleball, or you sit in an AA group, or you go to a church and you're like, hey, I'm new around here too. I don't know how all this stuff works. Like someone invites you to keep going on that path that information sets you on. But then this third component is the one that you've articulated so well, which is then there has to be an us to join. Because if not, then people just sort of slow down or stop thinking about it. If they don't have a new us to be a part of, human beings, man, we just, I mean, for some people, that us can be two people. For some, it can be a global community they never meet in person. For some, it's online, right? Whatever. It's a historic community that people live in, whatever. But you need something. And then I would even suggest the way that people get healthy, most healthy, is then they end up with a new worldview that makes sense out of their past and allows them to bring their past to bring some healing to the world that they want to live in. Like, that's where it really gets sort of key. But that community piece is really hard, because I'll tell you what, the people I know who admit that they were wrong about MAGA, they're friends and often family or the Democratic Party or some woke group they're in, like Vote Common Good or something, often doesn't treat them very well. They'll say stuff like, what took you so long? Or how could you have ever believed that? Or I'm not even sure I ever actually trust you. Like, and I mean, this is documented not only in personal stories, it's actually people that know their Bible well know, like, oh, this is like the Apostle Paul story, right? Starts as Saul, is persecuting Christians, then becomes one, then has to go hide away, and then the Christians don't recognize him and want him to leave and think he's doing it all wrong. Like, just how human beings have been across cultures in so many ways. And helping someone, so what happens to a lot of us, Rich, and I love your thoughts here. We think the information distribution is the essence of what we can do. You know, like, tell people things, show them the facts. Because that little list I gave, information, invitation, and community participation, sometimes it works in reverse. You know, like, people are like, I don't know, I started hanging around these people and I'm kind of in with them. And then they said, hey, there's more, and would you like to look at this? Like, sometimes it goes the other way. And I would even suggest maybe most of the time it goes the other way. Do you have any thoughts about any of that sort of taxonomy of change and all that, or how it influences you or your own work? Yeah. Yeah, look, I hear you. Can I push on a couple of those things for a minute from your own story, how you've managed this? There are some things in the MAGA movement which really does demonize people. Like, it is designed, and to the both sides this that watch all the time, welcome. We'd love to have you. Yes, I know that the Democratic Party and lefties and wokers and all this, we do it too. Yes. Okay. But we're talking about people who are leaving MAGA now. I'd love to have a podcast about people that left leftism and joined MAGA. That's true too. I know people because it's much closer than people might think, right? The circle, like the continuum might not be a straight line. It might be a circle, and you end up far enough on the continuum and turn around and you're standing right next to the people that are very similar to you. It's an interesting conversation, but there are some things inside of the MAGA world, and there are some things about Donald Trump in particular, which are attractive to many people that I know. A good friend of mine says it this way. He said, you know why I like Donald Trump? Because he hates Democrats more than I do. He stands up to him. We need a bully. We need him to punch you all in the metaphorical face, or as Trump says it, literally punch him in the face. Like, I need someone because you people are going to destroy America. You people want to. Okay, and there's a whole thing, right? And there's conversation about immigrants, and there's conversations about all kinds of people and attacking trans people. Like, there's a whole thing that goes on in the MAGA world that funds a lot of people's pursuits. It's why the Oath Keepers are in it. It's why the Proud Boys. And look, I've sat in bars having conversations with Proud Boys, you know, debating it out. It's on our channels and all this stuff. Like, I'm willing to engage, and I see the humanity in all people. But there's also something that's just true in all transition that requires a little confession, you know, of the information. So how do you help people who see this stuff going on? And some of us see it in our own family members. And we're like, are you kidding me right now? Like, do you really think that? And all of a sudden it comes up, well, no, actually, yeah, I do. So it's not good to say someone's homophobic or someone's against trans or someone's racist or someone's against immigrants. And then it gets a little bit hard sometimes for some people to be like, but you're surrounding yourself and you're putting up posts about these things and you're saying it and you're quiet on times when you shouldn't. Where does it fit for a person going through a transition, a conversion, a shift out, whatever, to kind of say, hey, there was some stuff I was into there that was really opposite of how I want to be, and I've come to realize that now. And what about the people who feel like they're pointing that out to family and friends? How do they navigate it? Do you see what I'm getting at? Because I think a lot of people feel really lost in how they truth tell. You know, and look, I'm all about calling in rather than calling out. Like, if you're going to call someone out, you better call them into something else, right? There's no point in saying, get out of there, unless you're willing to say, come on in here. Right. Yeah. You don't shout out your window to get away. You shout out your door to come on in. Super important. But how does someone do that with honesty and integrity if they think these other issues are actually at play? Wow. Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. It's a great combo. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, do you have a person there at the door? I heard a little knock knock. Okay. No. Around here, it's not a care in the world. We do this while we're living our normal lives, like everybody who watches and listens. It's called live, yeah. It's called live for a reason, because we're living our lives while we talk about these things. How much was Donald Trump personally, the personhood of Donald Trump, the guy, an attraction for you to get in and stay in and support? And how much was Donald Trump part of you thinking, I can't stay there anymore? Mm-hmm. 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 Interesting. You know, Rich, you strike me as someone who really wants to pursue an integrated life. Like, you seem like integrity and having your world match its exhortations, it matters to you. You know, you don't suffer fools lightly, and you don't want, I'm just sort of picking this up from your work and from your story, that you want there to be some integration and making things right. Is that, do you think that's true of you? Is that an accurate? Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right, right. Yeah. Right, right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's it. Yeah. Okay. For sure. That is, yeah. Yeah. That mission is complete. Yeah. Look, I think that's so helpful. I think that latter description there is what I think is going on. I think the reason Elon Musk and this whole, you know, Elon's department of getting rid of the government makes sense to people is because a lot of people in the country and a lot of people in the MAGA movement believe that the liberal tree has produced a lot of bad fruit and we have to get rid of the tree. It's all bad fruit. So we're just going to dig it up and get rid of it. USAID, like just go down the list of things that are part of the liberal imagination for globalism. And I think a lot of this roots in anti-globalist sentiment and being replaced with nationalist sentiment and so on. So it's kind of about that. And all the other stuff that happens is like, that's just how it goes, man. That's just, you know, that's what happens. Yeah, we're tearing down the house and that means we're going to tear up the yard. Sorry, but that's how it goes. That's what I think the essence of this Trump 2.0 dealio is just like, oh, we're done screwing around now. Like we have 48 months to accomplish this goal and we are starting, you know, month one. So I think that's right. I also want to say a comment about it's super interesting to hear you describe, you know, how people experience being encouraged to leave MAGA and what they go through. And I can't miss a good Jesus quote every now and again. And Jesus has this great analogy called a parable that he says, look, there's a bunch of field workers and some of them work all day and some of them work half the day. It's lovely that Jesus uses field workers, but field workers all day, field workers half the day. Some work 1 hour. And at the end of the day, they all get paid the same. They're all welcomed, you know? And the parable, after he finishes the parable, he says, and then all the other workers are like, no, I worked more of the time. And this merit-based system of he did the right thing, they didn't do the right thing, I should get more. And Jesus says, let me just describe to you the way humanity ought to be, the way the kingdom of God works. They're all going to get the same. Yeah. And that graciousness is what I think for a lot of people on the left, a lot of people in the middle, a lot of anti-Trumpers need to meditate on a bit. Like, are we willing to say, first of all, you can be an American and be MAGA. You're not an American. You can be an American and think a lot of things and do a lot of things. And you are an American. And if you change your mind, you're in just like everyone else and you don't have to earn it. Like but that's not how it is. I just want to be very blunt. I work in the political world. That is not how it, I mean, I'm looked at suspiciously for the work that I've done. Try telling somebody you voted for Bush twice and you get moved out and you're kept out over at the kids table, you know? So this is very common in the world. And we're going to have to overcome it because the purity demands on the left and the purity demands on the MAGA right, they're killing us and we have to be able to do something about it. Oh, interesting. How do you suggest how someone does that? Is that Okay. Right, sure. Yeah, and curiously, and I think we should admit, millions of Americans saw it differently. Like Trump got 62 million people to vote for him in 2016, 72 million in 2020, and 77 million in 2024. And some people like to say, well, that's because the total population of eligible voters went up. And that's true in 2024. But the number that it went up by in between 2020 and 2024, I mean, it went up in 2020 because of lots of openness for voting. Trump picked up more of those voters than the population increase of popular voters would indicate. So more people were saying yes to Trump after his term, after the insurrectionist activities, after the convictions, after his behavior post-presidency. They still said yes to him and said, we want even more disruption. We want the guy who said they're eating our dogs. We want the guy who said, I will strike a deal with Putin day one. I mean, so there's some just sheer realization we all have to come to that, like, a lot of Americans looked, and then they looked at Kamala Harris, who I'd worked hard to invite people to vote for, and they said, nope. So there are some realities that people like you and I, who live in a world where we're like, hey, some of us have made a shift. Millions of others have made the shift the other direction. And that, frankly, Rich, that keeps me up at night, which is probably why I reached out to you when I, you know, when I did. Like, this is really hard. This is really hard. Oh, there's no debate in my mind. He caused the problem. Yes, he caused the problem. Anyway, yeah, I'm not trying to blame the victim here, but I am wanting to be sure that they, you know, that credit is given where credit is due. Yes. Yeah. Yes, good Lord. Yeah. 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 Yes. Dude, I am with you. And yes, let's have that conversation about how economics works, how it does. We do that. We have a whole section on our playlist on YouTube, which is just our economics conversation, trying as best we can. Alex from Florida is on the YouTube chat. I can see her now. She's begging for us to have that conversation more often and more time. So yes, it is essential. And if COVID was the reason Trump lost the 2020 election. Now, I thought Trump's other behavior before COVID would be enough, and there's no way people who didn't vote for him in 2016 were going to vote for him in 2020. I was totally wrong. But as it turns out, it was COVID that caused people to be like, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. We need different. And then the impact of COVID was we pumped $1 trillion into the economy to save the economy, partly because of Trump's mismanagement of COVID, but we would have probably done a great portion of that anyway. Then that caused inflation, and that's what got Biden. So the two men shared the same crisis that inflicted the presidencies. And we don't have a way to talk about that. And, with 200 million people in the country that care about any of this stuff and 150 million or so that are going to choose to vote on Election Day. And it's not what anyone chose to make it about. And I just want to rant for a minute to my Democratic counterparts. If you continue to complain about disinformation on the right and don't spend your time communicating what you believe, then you are part of the problem. The problem is not what the right is saying to America. The problem is what you are not saying to America. Look, I spend a lot of time paying attention to politics. I heard Joe Biden's voice and Kamala Harris's voice a dozen times in 4 years. I heard Donald Trump nearly every day. While he was in political exile, would still hear from him. He communicated consistently and constantly. And the people running the White House, running the economy, would talk to reporters and not talk to the American people. And glad to get them. And I clicked on the button. Recruitment to contribute text messages from the campaigns for a year. Every single day. Did I get a single text message with a link that said, here is me talking to the American people about anything important? Never. Did I get a bunch of like, here's me walking on a stage? But did I get a... Hey, I'm talking to you, the American people, about what's going on. Like, if we're going to claim disinformation and not produce information, okay, rant is about to end. That is on us. And the American people were no smarter about anything the government does on Election Day, November 5th, 2024, than they were on Inauguration Day, 2021. And that is on the communication system of the Democratic Party and the rest of it. We didn't help anybody. We just simply said, why are you listening to these people? And look at all the disinformation that's going out. I'm not done with the rant, apparently. Even in all the places, the Midas touch and the stuff people do, never was it like, hey, let's give you a worldview here that you can carry with you. And what MAGA does well is gives a worldview. If you're unfamiliar with the concept of a worldview, this might not make a lot of sense, but they create a construct in which the world makes sense. Democrats say stuff like it's complicated, and then don't explain it and don't have anybody out explaining. Or if they do, they explain it to reporters and think that people are then going to read the report. And you know what? The journalists are not the media arm of the Democratic Party or the presidency. Talk to the American people. Get the biggest bully pulpit in the world. And if you can't do it because your age or because your communication style, whatever, get somebody who can. I could go on and on. And maybe, after we're done with all of this, you and I can, lick wounds about this. But it drives me crazy to hear people blaming the right for doing what they think they should do while people on the left don't communicate anything about what America should do. And if you want to critique me for overstatement, show me anything. I would be glad to see it. And don't send me a Robert Reich, you know, video here and there. It's just inexcusable from our political leaders top down and all the rest of it. So I don't know. There's so many problems in all of this that it doesn't feel like there's a political community or a political imagination that we're inviting people into. I mean, since Obama in 04, I have felt like, man, we are scrambling. Obama 08. We are scrambling to try to find some kind of a picture of what we're up to. You know, I don't know. And MAGA, and I say the same thing about Christian nationalists because I'm an anti-Christian nationalist worker and all this stuff. I'm like, the Christian nationalists are winning the argument because at least they're creating a vision that's compelling to people. And other Christians are not. So we have to be in the business of compelling people to a more preferable future. And if we don't, we can't be complaining that they are. Okay, now my rant is done. Please, sorry about that. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Right. Yeah. Yes. Yes. I couldn't agree more. Maybe we should do that. Maybe we should put together some joint effort town halls. We love that stuff, man. We love getting into buses and driving around and meeting with people and talking to them. Because I hear people. No. Nice. Oh. Yes.100%. Yeah, I look, ideas move person to person. I hear people complaining about Fox News and I'm like, look, on a good night, Fox News is going to have 4 million people or, you know, over a month, 4 million. It's nothing. And it's the same 4 million people. Like it's teeny. It's not 77 million. You get to 77 million by people talking to each other. You know, we had this little campaign that we revved up last week that was, look, if 72 million people who didn't vote for Donald Trump would have a conversation every day with a Trump supporter, you could have 72 million conversations a day. That's a lot. You run that over 1,400 days and you can get something done. But we know that doesn't happen. We know that people, and partly because people don't know what they would say. I mean, people say it all the time. They're like, what would I even say to my Trump supporting friends? And I'm like, okay, I think now that's on us as an organization. If we're going to say, if you see something, say something, they say, I don't know what I would say. Okay, we may have to a little bit of work to do to like help people know what to say. And maybe that's what your organization has already done. You know, we're working on a curriculum called Courageous Conversations, how to talk about faith and politics with those you love most. Because look, this is not going to be won by some kind of like figure out how to talk to a stranger about difference. This is how do you talk to a loved one about difference. That's where the problem is solved, is personal conversations, mixed marriages, split families, work situations, best friends that now can't talk about things. And so I honestly think what could help is if we said, hey, here's a container by which you could have this conversation. Here's different ideas. Like people don't just want simple answers. But what people don't want is to be looked down on and for someone to make it complicated and think they're stupid. And politicians, no, that's not the right word. Politics makes people feel stupid. And people don't like feeling stupid. And they want some straight talking and they want some things that kind of make sense. And they just want to be able to talk about it for a little bit. You know, I mean, we've already been going on, I don't know, should I look here? Yeah, we've been going on for 59 minutes and 45 seconds. Anybody who's still watching this has a tolerance level that is outside of 99% of the American people, right? Yeah. Yeah. Okay, been a whole bunch. So, hey, yeah, if you've got a comment or a question here for Rich or for me or for anybody, I'm scanning through the conversation here in the chat. By the way, pardon me for the echo. I caused an echo at the beginning. In the first 30, 40 seconds, there was an echo on your end, Rich, and that was created by me, not by you. Okay, Sam, I mean, there's some comments and there's some questions. You know, the antagonism that happens between people is really hard. So I'm gonna give you a feel for some of this. This person says, for years, I was brainwashed in the church to demonize feminists, to demonize lesbians and homosexuality and to vote Republican. I will never go back. So there's some cross currents of the religious community with the political community that's in this thing. Jim says, I have lots of MAGA friends. We agree to disagree. Talking to each other is very unpretentious. Once communication stops, bad things start. Yeah, and it's that's a real thing that I think is worth talking about. Like, when there's fundamental disagreements about the reality of things, that's not the place to have the conversation, I would suggest. Like, do you, and I wonder what your experience is with that personally or as an organization. What do you do in that space where you're like, okay, hold on a minute, we can't even talk about this? Yeah. Yeah. So in our world, we like to think that there's problems, and then there's the personal struggle with that problem, and then there's a solution suggestion to the problem. To talk about the solution and argue about the solution before you've talked about the struggle that people have with the problem is not the most effective way. You can spend a lot of time talking about the struggle That's empathy. You can have empathetic connection about the shared struggle and then say, now we're going to differ on what we think the solution is. We may even differ on where we think the problem came from. What we share is the struggle, because the struggle is real, man. Like, but that's the thing, right? That the struggle is the place. And I got to tell you, to my progressive friends, you tend to think that the MAGA people didn't get into this because they're struggling. You think they got into this because they're powerful. MAGA became the option that seemed like the best option to deal with the struggle. Totally. Totally. That's it. Rich, this has been so great. If there's a whole bunch of other comments in here, we've taken the time, all of us. Yeah. Well, thank you. And I think our organizations can be and should be synergistically engaged and finding some ways. I think that, you know, in our world, we like to describe the difference between a problem and a predicament, that problems have solutions and you just put one of the solutions in place. You know, you've got a broken sink, faucet, just replace the faucet, you know, or put in a new bushing or whatever. It's just a problem, you fix it. But then there's a predicament, and a predicament might be, oh, the water tower has a problem. Okay, that requires multiple responses. Predicaments don't have solutions. They have many responses. So much of what we've described here is not a problem. It's a predicament. And we need many, many ways to respond to the political separation and all that. And if we think that the problem, that MAGA is the problem as opposed to one of the responses to a problem or to a predicament, we're bringing the wrong toolkit to the crisis. And frankly, that I don't know, liberalism is one of the responses to a predicament, right? That's where we are. This is not problem solution stuff. This isn't us, you know, those things exist and we should have those arguments and they work with each other. You know, Trump is now using a whole bunch of solutions to things that aren't problems, tariffs and nonsense. It's just like he's causing the problem, not fixing it, in my view. So I'm not saying there aren't times where that happens, but the bigger question here is we're not just dealing with a little thing. We're dealing with a predicament, and it's going to take lots of people and lots of responses. And you might look to organizations like leavingmaga.org or Vote Common Good, and you should. But I'll tell you what we're also doing. We're looking to you. Like, not trying to pass the buck here, but we're trying to figure out, like, I don't know, you're actually an expert on how to talk to people in your world about MAGA. You know why? Because your brother-in-law, your sister, your mom, your son, they're unique. They're not all the same. Not every MAGA person got there for the same reason and stays there for the same reason. There's many a reason why people are in this world.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And you can be serious with joy and with a wink and with inclusion, stern. Yeah, our kids would say when they were teenagers and stuff, and we'd take them into the living room to have a conversation. They're like, oh boy, we're having the living room talk. You know, someone's in trouble. Totally different talk than we had in the kitchen, in the family room, in the yard. You know, we need to have these conversations in the kitchen, the family room, in the yard, not out in the living room. You know, if that metaphor could make any sense. Well, Rich, I want to commend you on bringing that college study degree of both English in quoting Shakespeare and theology in quoting the Bible right to the conclusion here. So well done, wherever that degree was earned from. It's been well utilized. Oh, where is that? Okay. Yeah, I heard a bit of what I thought might be a New York way of saying words. No, never should. And are you comfortable telling people what part of Florida you're in? Now, a lot of people only know Broward County from Hanging Chad legend of, 2000. What part of Florida is that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. So to those of you who, you know, say bad things about certain states or good things about certain states based on who their electoral recipients have been or the governor is, there aren't blue states and red states. I'm going to get all Obama in 04. There's just places where some political parties win more than others, and that shifts around. Florida used to be seriously blue. Arkansas was very blue. Now they're red. Colorado used to be red. Now it's blue. Because red and blue doesn't make any sense, and purple. And that kind of thing is just not helpful either. There are people making choices politically based on information and experiences. And if you don't think there's something to this, just ask yourself, why do politics outcomes cluster in certain locations? Like, why does gerrymandering work? It's because you live with near people and you tend to start thinking similarly politically. Why does that happen? How does that happen? And that's something just worth thinking, just a little more, I don't know, a little more Friday night dreamy thought about, why is the world the way it is? Why are there whole states that shift? Because information is, you know, borderless. The people in Arkansas aren't getting certain information from 1992 to 2025. They get the same information everybody else did, but something else was afoot. And often it is that people were active and working. You find out these crime scenes have fingerprints all over them. There were people there. People make change in America. That is how it works. Unless you believe that there's just information overlords that are just downloading. And if you do, fair enough. But that's not how it works. It's people influencing other people. And so we should be in the people business. First and foremost, if we're not in the people business, it's just not going to work. It's not about systems and structures alone. It's about human beings doing humaning things with each other. And actually, I'm going on and on, so sorry. But there's statistics that even show like certain things come into place, more public parks, more ethnic restaurant. Like there's just things that happen that cause people politically to shift one way versus the other. So there's, and they're all rooted in decisions that are made by people. And those decisions are often connected to leaders who make decisions. And Democrats have had a leadership problem across the country from top to bottom for a long time, and a visioning problem. And hopefully that will be different. And hopefully this current crisis that we're in. We will stop right there. There's no better words for this than that. All right, buddy. Thank you. Thanks.
Okay, y'all. Hey, thanks for being a part of the podcast and all, and share this, and we'll chop this up into little bits and pieces so you can share it more quickly for the 15-second, 20-second, versions. So thanks, Rich. Hey, appreciate it, man.